As this is the first time that we've really met for a sitting in this new place, I thought it might be appropriate to remind us of what we're doing. This is a beginning, in a sense, a beginning of a new place. But that already is a bit of a misnomer, because we wouldn't be here were it not for the things that occurred before. So where is really the beginning? And this brings up something that is central to the practice of Zen and to what Zen is all about. Zen is about bringing us to reality, actual existing reality. In reality, there is no beginning and there is no ending, actually. If we say there is a beginning and an ending to anything, we are referring merely to a story in our minds. We do not experience, at this second, a beginning or an ending. We have to place whatever we perceive is occurring at this moment into a story in order to have such a thing as beginning and ending. Now that applies to everything that is going on in our minds. If I were to say what the secret is of coming to what we emphasize in Zen, awakening, coming to know who and what we are directly, it would be what Zen Master Dogen once said: abandon body and mind, and then abandoning body and mind. Now, when people hear such a thing, they say, well, I value my body, I take care of it because it's my vehicle, and this is a total misunderstanding of what Dogen said. If you say abandon mind, well, mind is the central thing in us human beings, and it's what enables us to, and we've missed it again. Well, this whole thing of abandon, and we've missed it again. So, in order to understand and practice this Zen, we need to some degree, activate that part of our being that is able to get the sense of something without having to translate it into a story. Abandoning body and mind, if you take it literally, then it's part of a story. And nobody who is a teacher of Zen has advocated the abandoning of the mind function of the physical body, nor have they really thought of suggesting to people that they abandon. What do we mean by abandon? It means you kind of are going along one day and then you discover you have to abandon something and you leave it in a vacant lot somewhere and walk on. In other words, there has to be a sense of knowing what is being referred to before all this story business. Now, Zen Master Shunryu Suzuki wrote a wonderful book that we always recommend to people. It's called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and most of you have read the book. And the very title is really all you need. Zen Mind is Beginner's Mind. That means before you added on anything at all. When we were born, we didn't have any idea of the story of our life, and if we were asked what our life was and if we could articulate it, goodness knows what we'd say. This question wouldn't make sense. What are your plans for your life, little 1-month-old? What's your life been like so far? See, it's total nonsense. There is no story. There is no projection into what we call a future. There is no entering into what we must understand as being an insane world. Totally insane. What is insanity? Insanity is holding to a reality that doesn't exist. In order to find this beginner's mind, which it is the function of our Zen to help us to do, and it is something that we must always, as we sit on the cushion for the 10,000th time, realize that it is our gateway. What is this beginner's mind? Coming to know who and what we are directly, and as has been for so many centuries, the teaching of Buddhism, the ending of all suffering, is to come to this beginner's mind, is to step out of insanity. Insanity, by its just etymological definition, means something unhealthy. Insane means unhealthy. That's what basically what the word means etymologically. It's not to the good health of our being, of our fundamental being. We do all kinds of things that injure us or decrease our sense of health. Well, we know some of these things, our nutrition, our exercise, all the rest of it. But this is something very fundamental about what brings us away from the health of our being. It is living by insanity. Now, you can look at anything that we human beings do, and you will find what I mean by insanity. Holding to a reality that doesn't exist. Now, many of you, most of you, have heard this before, but that's unfortunate. Because having heard it before might mean that you think you know it. But if you knew it, you would be living it. And if you were really living it, you would all be enlightened. What does this mean, that everything is insane? Well, tell me about your life. And what will we hear? How will people answer? Tell me about your life. What has your life been like so far? What has your life been like this week? What do you plan for your life in the future, in next month, next year, next day? What? And it is all a story. It is not what breathes you and walks you and produces the words that you speak. It is not that. It is but a story. We ask, who are you? And most people will come up with some kind of a ready answer that will identify with their ethnic origin, with their knowledge, with their achievements in life, with their geographic trajectory through life, with so many things, and yet that too does not breathe you and walk you. And it is a story. It is insane to hold to these things. Yes, we use them conveniently. We're applying for a job, we write down this thing called a resume. And at that moment, we must not think of it as being nonsense, because it is being given to people who live the same nonsense. And they make evaluations and judgments based upon what you write down. We live in an insane world, and we have to know how to live in this insane world. It's called being politically hip. But we must understand, if we are undertaking the practice of Zen, which is to come to our authentic life, we have to know that this does not apply in this endeavor. this endeavor is a real endeavor. That is to say, it is outside of the realm of all stories. Now that must be completely and fully understood in order that a person may practice Zen. So what does this mean? It means that, for example, one of the insanities that we have is that we lack something and that there's a strategy in order to get it. This is commonplace in life. We lack enough, what do we say, bread. So we go to the bread store and we buy some bread. There's a solution for that problem and a trajectory and getting there and getting in your car and getting in there and buying the bread and so on. We think that way about most things in our lives. We need training for a particular job and we need to have a degree, or we need to shave in the morning, or we need to, there's all kinds of things that we, and there's a trajectory, there's a method in order to arrive at that place and accomplish that goal and so on. I am not denying that. This is just operating in this story world that we live in. I am talking about the practice of Zen, the practice of coming to our authentic life, which liberates us from all suffering and opens the world up for what it is beyond all stories. Stories blind us. They do not fulfill us. They do not bring life to us. Temporarily, perhaps. You leave a good movie, a good play, you come out with some kind of transformation, you might say. It lasts a little while, and then it moves along to the point of chatting about it and having opinions about it and reading the reviews, and on it goes, and it's gone. Becomes a part of history. I remember the time when, and so on. Becomes a part of the story. We are talking here about something that is a fundamental transformation that transforms every moment of every day. For that, we have to realize that all our precious knowledge and our understanding of the world stops us. Now, I know that some of you here and many, many other people have searched around for what the purveyors of such things call teachings. They may be exalted teachings, they may be knowledge about Buddhism, and they may be and so on and so on. But from the viewpoint of coming to know who you are, from actually fulfilling the intention of the Buddha to bring people to realize this, and to help individuals to step into the authentic, living, breathing life that is beyond all suffering, they are nonsense. They are an absolute waste of time. They are an obstacle. I asked one of you at one time, what do you get from going with this particular guru? And he said, well, we get teachings. Teachings. Nonsense. Might be exalted, might be beautiful, might be traditional, might be found in many books, might be and so on. But they come from a person who is unenlightened. Because if they were enlightened, they wouldn't waste their time doing that. Because it is just some more knowledge. And knowledge means that it contributes to this thing that is so unique to us human beings that we build structures of reality in our minds and we operate as though those structures of reality were actually existent, like our life and so on and so on. There is no trace of that. It is all nothing. It is all a story. We are coming to that which is beyond stories. And so the function of this so-called knowledge is that it acts as a filter. All of you know the tendency of human beings, for example, to say, oh God, another Monday. Thank God it's Friday. Like there's going to be some kind of a transformation into some different kind of life is going to occur. People say those things. Why do they say them? Because they have a concept of their mind that keeps them from realizing the uniqueness of each moment. There is no such thing as another Monday or another weekend. There is no such thing except in the story. Now, I don't need to belabor the point, but all of these so-called knowledges and understandings all act as filters, and they all are substitutes that we can settle into and get comfort from and so on. But from the viewpoint of authentic Zen, that is to say, the authentic path towards understanding and knowing and coming to experience directly who and what we are, they are not only a waste of time, they are an obstacle. They prevent us from coming to this beginner's mind, that is the mind before we have become addicted to all this stuff. That is the practice of Zen. Coming to this place before we are addicted to all this stuff. Therefore, what we do in Zen, which is the beginning of all Buddhist meditation, that is to say, Buddhist meditation that leads to realization, the realization of who and what we are, and liberation from suffering, the basic intent of the compassionate Buddha, is that we begin by sitting or standing or walking, but easier to learn this by sitting, and we observe the mind. We do not get caught by it. We do not follow along with the fantasies, as is the common practice. But we say, oh yes, there's that thought that came in. Oh yes. There's that emotion that came in. There's that hope. There's that fear. There's that anxiety. There's this whatever. And we just notice it and return to something. The usual thing we suggest is the breath. It doesn't have to be the breath. Can be a particular other practice, a koan, whatever, that we offer to folks, but you return away from being seduced to follow that along. And you come back. And as you do that, the tendency to be addicted to these stories drops away. That does not say that you cannot use the stories if you need to. But what we're talking about here is what we call famously in Buddhism, attachment. That is, you have to follow along the stories. You don't have to. Now that process leads finally to the emptying of the mind. This is truly what is meant by abandoning body and mind. And then, having done that, you might say, well, I've achieved this peaceful, serene mind, wherein no thought that comes in or emotion that comes in takes root. It simply passes through like an actor across the stage, like a cloud floating through the sky. That all is wonderful. But notice what you've done. You have made a concept of a state, which means that you have stood outside the state. You are talking about something. So you come to the next huge step in the practice of Zen, which is the abandoning of abandoning. You get a little bit more street smart about the mind, a little bit more hip. And that takes a different kind of effort. An effort that is, I would say, unique to Zen. Because Zen does not have an end point. There are some so-called spiritual paths that have some kind of an end point. And the end point is one of, let's say, profound understanding or the development of a compassionate and kind mind. And someone mentioned to me the other day as was important to her, a heart connection. I have nothing against any of these things. They're all wonderful. But from the viewpoint of Zen, we speak in Zen of a Zen, so-called Zen circle. And a circle has 360 degrees. And this position of achieving something, exalted though it may be, and peaceful and wonderful and so on and so on, and even inspiring to others, is at 180 degrees. It is not the full circle. We in Zen present folks with a way to go the full circle. And this is the abandoning of abandoning. The coming to being a full person without reference point, without comparing oneself to anything, without having a particular touchstone that says you have achieved or not achieved or whatever. It's all gone. Now, I can't go into right now the details of this whole process. But all of you who have been practicing Zen for some time know about this process. And some of you have learned how to abandon abandoning. And then the process is infinitely expandable. Why is it infinitely expandable? Because life never recurs. As old Heraclitus said back in the days prior to Plato, in the early Greek days, you can't step into the same river twice. You can't step into the same life twice. You can't step into the same Monday or Friday or whatever twice. It is always different. Why is it always different? Our stories say it's the same. Another Monday. But that's because we filter out everything that is unique and different about this particular day, which means most of it. Every day, every moment is a unique day, a unique time. It has to be a unique time. The causes and the conditions that led to this moment have never been repeated, cannot be repeated, because every change that occurs contributes future causes that not only prevent the repetition of what has already been, but create the circumstances for the new arising all the time. Therefore, we have to be prepared for the new. How do you prepare yourself for the new? In the old story way, you might say, well, let me make a distinction between the new and the accustomed. Let me see the difference there, and I'll prepare myself for the new. This is nonsense. You're just dealing with concepts, with ideas, and they will all have their limitations, and they will all be just nonsense. Nonsense because you are stepping outside of your authentic life. It is not the breathing person that does this. It is some observer, conceptualizer of the new that is creating an idea of the new to make it into a goal that you can march towards. This we have to realize if we are to return to beginner's mind. And it's a wonderful time in the beginning to use this new space to remind ourselves what the practice of Zen actually is. It is coming into beginner's mind. Every time you sit down, every time you, and I would like to say every moment of your life is stepping into beginner's mind. How do you do this if it's not to make a concept of the new as opposed to the old or the accustomed or whatever? How do you do this? By the work of having let go, seen through and thus allowed to pass all the knowledge and ideas that you hold on to, and to be alert, present. Most people in the ordinary world will think of this as being nonsense. Why should you be attentive to every time you open a door and walk out of the way, put your shoes on? Why? It's just putting your shoes on. It's just the ordinary thing that we've done. Why should this lack of understanding is almost universal. The lack of understanding that this moment that presents itself to you, whether it's putting on your shoes or whether it's walking a step in the room, whether it's turning a faucet, opening a door, whatever it may be, is a moment that has never been there before. It is not that the content of this moment is the important thing. It is not the actual feel of your hand on the door handle. That's how. But what happens is that you are using each moment to let go of this tired old mind that says, one more door handle. I remember a time many years ago when I was studying and ultimately teaching mime. And we used to have people, well, you know, learn how to open a door. So, but before we do that, just show me how you open a door. People have opened doors thousands of times. They would reach out and turn a door handle, but then what do you do with it once you have turned it? How do you get through the door, and then what do you do with this hand that's holding onto the door handle when you pass through the door? What do you do? Thousands of times have people done that, and they don't know what you do. They could not replicate it. That was a great teaching. A great teaching to all who were wishing to learn something about this process of living. And you know that that's probably true of you, everyone here. You've opened a door thousands of times. What do you do with the hand that just opened the door? What do you do with it? When do you drop it to your side? Or what do you do with it? That when you get through, how do you close the door? This is a sign that one has not been attentive. So it is not the feel of the door handle. It is not to be able to memorize exactly how you open a door and how you close it. The important thing is being present. Being really, really present. Because this original self, the original world, is always here. It has never departed. It is always you. As the Buddha said, he looked around and he saw everybody manifesting this fundamental nature. Everybody. It's just that they didn't know it. Enlightenment is not acquiring a fundamental nature. It is not gaining something that wasn't there before. It is realizing, making real in one's life, unveiling what was already there. This is the great mystery of what this process is. It is hidden by our addiction to stories, ideas, dreams and fantasies that occur all the time. Why, even during a sitting like this, I've seen people go out in a mid-break and have to consult their cell phone, have to consult their iPhone and just check out any messages. This is the addiction. This is an addiction. This is what I'm talking about. Can you not, even for 1 hour, let it go? What do you think depends upon it? Is it your life, your authentic life? Or have you become so addicted to the entertainments of the mind, the structure of a story that you have to keep checking on being a part of some story? What is it? Be soberly aware of what your answer is. Because that may be robbing you at this moment from undertaking the true practice of Zen that liberates us. And then after that, use your cell phone if you need to, of course. We're talking about an addiction. The process of Zazen is, in a sense, a detoxification process. It's a detox room, in a sense. That has to be understood. That has to be understood, that all your ideas about the self and about what you have to have an allegiance to in order to be alive and be able to talk to people the next day about what was on the television or night before or check in with everybody on Facebook or whatever it may be, is an irrelevancy with respect to coming into realization of your own life. Not only your own life, but it goes beyond that. It is not this, it is not just this living, breathing being. That's wonderful enough. But it is the whole world. One of the most mysterious truths that was spoken by Zen Master Dogen was that you are mountains, rivers, the whole wide earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars. Oh, now that's getting a bit far out. How can I be? And now what happens in the mind? Some story about the universe, some story about the moon that is so far away and requires light to take 1 second to go back and forth and whatever. And the sun, well, my goodness, that's 93 million miles away. And how can I be the sun? And one more story. We are talking about the experiential life of a person. Zen is not about stories, valuable though they are, and of great efficacy in constructing civilized things and achieving goals and all the rest of it. We are talking about the awakening to our life. This, we mean, is the experienced life of us beings. So when Dogen says you are mountains and rivers, the whole wide earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars, he's referring to something quite different than a story about the universe. For you do not experience that. You can imagine that and give yourself some kind of a benefit from it, some kind of a high, to realize, we're so, it's just, all these little worries and thoughts we ever so minute compared to the vastness of the universe and all the rest of it. It's good stuff, you know. Everybody to see the picture of the Earth from space, from a spacecraft or whatever, and to see how it really is kind of, small. And we down here on the planet Earth, being so concerned with all these little things in our lives and in the light of that and so on, that's good. Helps us to release a little bit, but not to realize what Dogen meant. You are mountains and rivers, the whole wide earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars. We have a number of koan that help individuals to do that, and that's if one undertakes the formal koan training, which is the unique thing about it, one of the unique things about Zen. There's a koan, for example. The student comes to a master and says, what is Buddha? Master says, the oak tree in the garden. Is he speaking metaphorically? Is he saying the oak tree and you and are all made up of atoms and space and therefore? No, it has nothing to do with that. There's more stories, more concepts. There is something much more fundamental and experiential about it. Beyond even what some Republicans denigrate liberals for as tree huggers. It's quite different. It's more fundamental. It is fundamental experience, living experience, not an idea, not a story. Beautiful though they may be and helpful to our humanity and all the rest of it. I'm not denying that. We're talking about something quite different. There needs for the practice of Zen to be some kind of a hunger and thirst for that. A recognition that you are not limited by the stories and ideas that you have in your mind about yourself or the world. That you are fundamentally much more than that. And that here is a process by which one awakens to the illusions that have prevented one from coming to realize this fundamental truth about oneself. And it is possible, as we say in Zen, for everyone. Why is it possible for everyone? Because everyone is always manifesting this reality, but they don't know it. That's a great mystery, is it not? And why don't I simply know that I am mountains and rivers and the whole wide earth? And that's what we call in Zen the Genjo Koan, the puzzle of our daily life. If that is true, why am I not enlightened? That's the thing. We've been talking a little bit about it, the illusions that get in the way, the things, the addictions that we have towards these stories and ideas. These addictions that we have towards method, acquiring more knowledge, going for teachings, more and more books to understand. Or the reverse, giving up, getting into despair. Having some idea of the self that you are incapable of it because you're just, after all, just a small being and you don't have that much education and knowledge. It's nonsense. It has nothing to do with the level of education. It has nothing to do with your gender, with your age or anything. It has to do with something quite different from waking up, about waking up from the illusions that prevent you from realizing something. And making the effort that is required, the unique effort that is required, which is the practice of Zen, in order to deal differently with these things than to let them populate the mind and be the puppeteer that pulls around the puppet of the self. So I put this little Xinjin Ming on my lap as I began to talk about this because I thought I would just illustrate from it some of the things that he mentions, this great Tsung-Tsun, that stand in the way, but it wasn't necessary. You see, this is what we find out all the time. Our life is lived not according to fulfilling a preparation, not according to fulfilling some kind of strategy. It is lived in spite of us. Whatever I've said, be it of value or no, came from some place that I know not. It had nothing to do with preparation. It had to do with being in your presence. Sensing you all. Knowing some of you. That's where it came from. For we truly are mountains and rivers, the whole wide earth. Our mind is not limited by something within our heads. Our mind encompasses a universe that includes everyone whom we meet, except we have barriers to that. We claim we know somebody, and particularly knowing ourselves. But all we have in our minds is a story, whether it is of someone else or ourselves. That's what we substitute for real knowing. These are the things which, in order to come to operating from beginner's mind, a person has to realize and make the effort to realize and remind oneself over and over and practice. This is what leads to eventually the realization of who and what we are. This was the promise and the intention of the Buddha. It was not to create all kinds of teachings. It was not to create the addiction of people to all kinds of the writings that got recorded after he died. It was to have people do what essentially he said was the path. And for themselves, not from somewhere else, but for themselves, to know themselves and thus be liberated from suffering and restored to fundamental authenticity of being. This is what we practice in Zen. And this is hopefully what we will begin anew, as it were, to practice in this new space. We'll end there today.